Wednesday edition of the Dunked On Basketball Podcast. It has been a little bit more than a month since we last did it, so it's time to check in again, take the temperature of the league with our monthly awards. Danny, what's up?
Doing well. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. A little bit of a dreary day today, but now that we get to debate some meaningless awards, meaningless in the sense, except in the sense that they cost players a lot of money, or earn players a lot of money, but now to stop rambling and do some awards.
Okay, so we're going to start with MVP, right?
Yeah, we are. I've still got stuff.
Yeah, I think that's one that we have to agree on. He has dropped off from what he was, but he's still the best player in the league.
Yeah, no longer the best PER ever. Really, since the Toronto game, has not had one of his monster games, and that's almost a month. Part of that's been due to the fact that he's had kind of these nagging injuries. He looked a little tired. I think part of it, too, is just because once they came back from that road trip, they sort of made the decision that they're relying on him too much, and he's tried to be more of a facilitator as well. So I think those are the reasons I think that, he's been playing more like he played last year than than the absolutely otherworldly level that he was at for the first month and a half or so.
Okay, so where do you go after that? Because I think one isn't interesting, but as you move on, it gets more compelling.
Yeah, I would go with Russ still. He is number one overall in RPM. He has actually, I think, the highest RPM that I can remember anyone having at this point. He's like 11 overall. Even the RPM even likes his defense, which I kind of disagree with overall, but especially when you look at how Oklahoma City is defended as a whole. But I think he's been fantastic. He hasn't missed any games. So I think it's still an Oklahoma City has overall been playing very well, and I think to the extent that they haven't been, a lot of that's not his fault. So I would say he's my number two for the moment.
I'd go,
but it's pretty close, I think, with him and then Kawhi and LeBron.
Yeah,
below.
I have Kawhi number two, and the reason for that is Kawhi. While I think that their difference between them offensively will expand over time, I think that Kawhi has been closer to Westbrook's level offensively than Westbrook has been to Kawhi defensively. And something that you brought up last month that has really changed my opinion, kind of thinking about this, is the idea of the value he provides on defense relative to other guys who do similar things, and even just relative to an average perimeter player. Like, Russ is a great guy. He's my third player. But I think that what Kawhi is doing for the Spurs is more valuable than Westbrook, though, of course, it is close.
Yeah, and the Spurs, obviously, have been kicking, but I don't ascribe to the whole, his team is good, so you have to pick someone from this team.
Agreed.
But just considering that they had basically the best month in recorded net rating history this last month, which we're going to be talking about a lot, obviously, with a 20.4 net rating since December 1st, then I think that can kind of be a tiebreaker over LeBron. I think LeBron, I don't know, if you wanted to have the best team that you could for the rest of the season, would you want Kawhi or would you want LeBron?
Kawhi. I mean, there is some variance based on what kind of surrounding talent you have, but if let's say you're just going randomly everywhere else, I'd rather have Kawhi.
Yeah, that's a really tough call for me. It was tough for me. I mean, I still think that LeBron is probably a little bit better a basketball player than Kawhi, but just being older, and especially at his peak being older, the fact that he can't hit a jump shot, he has kept this Cleveland team afloat pretty well without Kyrie, and now they're starting to hum again pretty well now that Kyrie has returned and is looking pretty good. So, I mean, I think it's more kind of all right, we're going to reward Kawhi for what he's done. I mean, Kawhi is not going to continue to shoot. I mean, I think, if anything, LeBron will shoot better on jumpers, and Kawhi is going to shoot worse on jumpers, especially shooting 50% from three. The way Kawhi is, it's not going to continue. I think teams will adjust a little bit more to what Kawhi is doing as well, and this is really his first stint as an absolute number one option, and the Spurs have a lot of other options too, but I think they're going to really make him the number one focus of the scouting report defensively. So I still think that LeBron is a little bit better, but I would say that Kawhi has been better so far, and that's why I had him slightly above LeBron, who was my number four.
So I put LeBron above Durant, but the reason I did that was because he's played more games, and I think he's been a little bit more in that. I think that you could make an argument, and I probably would, that Durant has played better, but part of value is the overall contribution, and so I think that LeBron's overall contribution beats Durant.
Yeah, frankly, I think that KD will probably be better than LeBron and better than Kawhi for the rest of the year. If I had to pick one of the, and now that's not counting health, obviously, and KD has had his health foibles, LeBron and Kawhi have not. So, although Kawhi has missed time in previous years, but not with anything that's, you know, kind of the more lower body concerning injuries the way that KD has. But I think just if you had to ask me who's going to play better on a just a rate basis for the rest of the year, I'd say probably KD, and maybe even KD over Russ as well.
Yeah, I would probably have KD over Russ as well.
Defensive player of the year, still Kawhi, very obviously to me. I had him last year. They've continued to defend at this unbelievable rate. His defensive RPM is actually even higher than last year. Now it's in like the mid-fours, which is ridiculous for any player who's not a big. I see no reason to change that at all.
Yep, you've converted me. We can move on.
Who did you have last month?
Draymond. And
No, I thought you had Tim Duncan.
Oh, you're right, I had Duncan. That's right. Yeah, I mean, Kawhi, the more I watch the Spurs, the more I realize that while Duncan is important, Kawhi is more important to their success.
Yeah, and I think that there are ways to attack Duncan, and I really think there's just no way to attack Kawhi. All right, this is going to be real interesting, probably what I'm most looking forward to on this show. And we're going to go through all the first three teams in all NBA. And part of the reason I wanted to do that was because of our discussion the other day of whether AD looks like he's not going to start the All-Star game now. And so he still has to be voted to first, second, or third team All-NBA. And if he is not, then he's going to lose basically $25 million. He's going to have a five-year, about $125 million contract with a starting salary of about $21 million. Versus if he qualifies for the Rose Rule, then he'll have 5 years, about $150 million with a starting salary of about $25. It'll probably even be a little bit more than that. So,
and one thing, I think we should go, if you can, go in order within a positional group. So if you think like that one guard is better than the other, to put them in order, because then that shows where the margins are. Like that's what I did, just to make it a little bit clear.
And there is a ton of competition at forward for AD. I think he's not going to be... wouldn't be voted as a center. But here's my first team All-NBA. You can guess it's pretty close to based on my top four in MVP, which is Steph, Russ, and then Kawhi and LeBron at the forwards. And then what continues to be a relatively underwhelming year for centers, I went with Andre Drummond by a hair over Cousins, but I still think that Cousins has been, you know, not nearly as good as he was during like his better stretches.
So I had the same five as you, but the thing that I struggled with, which is a challenge for all NBA, is I think of it less in terms of overall contribution value, let's say like most valuable player, and more about, you know, how good you were when you were on the court. So I considered putting Durant over LeBron, but they're so close, and I think that at this point that was enough to – LeBron playing more games was enough to keep it there. But I really seriously considered having Durant on first team.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know why it would really be any different for all NBA as it would be MVP. I think it's just sort of what value did you create? I mean, this is my rubric. Number one, just what value did you create over the course of the year? And then if there's a tie, number one, it's if one person played significantly more games. And then number two, it's, all right, how good do I actually think this player is? You know, do they have a track record of success? Would I actually, even if they were good over the course of the year, would I want them on my team in the ensuing playoffs, like that sort of thing? But that's you had Drummond as well. Was it close at all between Drummond and any of the guys behind him for you?
I considered Cousins, but I didn't think when I really kind of thought about it, Cousins has been good. He's also missed more time, but I thought that right now Drummond has been better, so I gave the spot to him. I think defensively especially, he's been such an important part of their success.
Yeah, and Cousins, it's just really hard because when he tries, he can be okay on defense. When he doesn't, he's a disaster. He could just get ejected at any time. He's missed a fair amount of time as well. I think like 8 or 9 games as well. He got suspended. He's had injuries, the sore Achilles. So, yeah, I mean, I think that he definitely is the most talented player. If you had to pick a, you know, one center to just be your only good player on a team, you would probably would go Cousins over Drummond. But I think overall, Drummond has been a little bit better. So Cousins was my center on second team NBA. Then I had James, and this is when it got really hard because this kind of next tier, especially among the guards. James Harden and Kyle Lowry, and let's start right there. Let's just do the guards, because then my third team was Chris Paul and Jimmy Butler. What did you have for the guards?
We sadly agree there, and it was brutal though. I was between Paul and Lowry for a while. I hadn't really thought about how close that was, but Chris Paul, the guy who I just advocated the Clippers should trade, has had a really nice year. He's been such an important part for them, especially when Blake has missed time. But Lowry is that guy for the Raptors too, and so I think that on the margins again, and this is one that I expect will flip by next month. But right now, I think Lowry's been better.
Yeah, I think that's right. It, just in terms of the overall value that he's provided, but yeah, I mean, I think that if you wanted me to go win games for the rest of the season, I would probably pick Chris Paul over him. I would expect that by the end of the year, Paul will be ahead of where he is, just with the better track record, the fact that Lowry can kind of drop off, that a lot of his success is built on really hot three-point shooting, all that. And then Harden, you know, despite not having anywhere near as good of a year as he did last year, he's been much more inefficient. He's had some really high turnover games. You know, he's still basically is carrying a Rockets offense that doesn't have anyone else who really has been like that great of an offensive player this year, frankly.
It's really impressive to me that he has been so much worse than he was last year and is still so good. You know, like that's something for a guy who came up relatively quickly. That's really kind of impressive to go from that historic high to be, you know, let's say disappointing this year, but not only is he really their best player, he's their offensive driving force. And I think he doesn't really have a real clear-cut case barring injury to get into the first team, but he's been the third best guard this year.
Did you have Paul and Butler in your third
yeah.
team? Yeah, and Butler, I still think it's almost cheating to have him as a shooting guard. He really is more of a small forward. He generally guards small forwards, but you know, he's starting a shooting guard, so
well, and that's also what happened, which is weird, is so the guards were really strong 1-5 and then got worse at 6. Like I thought I had more trouble for myself picking the forwards than I did the guards at that spot, so I just kind of cheated and slid Butler over because he actually does do those roles.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I mean, then you're kind of getting down into like John Wall, who has been really good the last month but had a putrid first month by his standards at least. You know, Dwayne Wade, who I think is very overrated what he's doing at this point. Although, I mean, it's impressive for his age, but overrated by traditional statistics, I think, and just being the face of a franchise that's been pretty decent. So, yeah, that wasn't as hard to me. Forward, though, was really hard. I went with KD and Draymond as my forward.
Yeah, KD was
in the second.
KD was easy. Draymond was hard. I ended up the same way there with you. And the reason for that is, we're going back into value. He's probably the best defensive power forward in the league. He's provided such a huge offensive role, though he does get the help of playing with Stephen Curry. But what he has been able to establish for himself at a forward position is everybody who can do something remotely similar to what he's doing offensively is above him on the list. So that doesn't make it a criticism. That's just how valuable those guys are.
Yeah, and the fact that he can also slide over to center, well, he's certainly is something that adds to his value as well.
I wish I could have put him as the first team center. I just can't morally do it, considering how rarely they go to that lineup.
Yeah. My third team forwards were Chris Bosh and Paul George. Apologies to Blake Griffin, Paul Millsap, Dirk, Derek Favors, AD, you know, all of those I thought were pretty tough choices. I mean, I think maybe the most controversial would be that maybe two aspects of it were Paul George not being on the second team, but he is, I think he has been just maybe it's just my own not particularly caring that much for his offensive game and the way he gets his points, the fact that I think he's reliant on shooting a little bit too hot on jumpers right now. I think his defense has fallen off to some degree as well, especially when going up against some of the real good players. So I that's why I had him on the 13, but it's very close to me between Draymond and Paul George for that spot. And I mean, I think also it's one of those things where if you were just starting a team in a vacuum with average players around him, maybe you probably would go with Paul George. But, you know, with Draymond doing what he's doing and, you know, really all the on-off stuff likes Draymond better than Paul George, I went in that direction.
So I considered both of the players that you chose and went with two different players. So for me, the next guy was Paul Millsap, who I seriously considered for second.
So Paul George, not on any of your first three teams.
Nope.
Interesting. All right. Well, that's, I mean, he's the best player. You know, the only guy you can really point to as being like an above average player on that team right now, and they've been pretty decent. You know, how are you justified leaving him completely off?
I think that he's been a very good player for them, but you know, they've had contributions from players around there. And for me, just because you're the only strong player and your team is doing well, if somebody else is doing better, like, so the other guy that I have, which I think will be more controversial for you, is Anthony Davis. I think Davis has been a superior player to Paul George. He just has had this tire fire of a team around him.
All right. If you're a power forward and your team is horrible defensively, it is really hard for me to say. And last year, you know, they were good when he was on the floor, and then when he was off, they were terrible, and that was a big part of why they were 22nd. This year, they haven't been good, the last time I checked at least, even when he was on the floor. So I just, if he is just not going to be good, and just subjectively as well, he hasn't been able to stop anybody, he's not blocking as many shots, not getting on the offensive glass as much as he was either, although that's not as much defensively related or at all related to that. I think it's I can't reward him when his team, he is the linchpin of that defense and the defense has been so bad.
I see where you're going with that, but he's also the linchpin of their offense. And I think I appreciate whether I think it's fair that I think that his job on offense to me is harder than what Paul George has, especially when you consider the surrounding talent. I mean, when you talk about the idea of him on and off the court, what you have to consider there is that his surrounding talent this year, especially early in the year, was substantially inferior to Paul George's. And so, yeah, of course, they look worse with him on the floor because when they're starting Ish Smith, when they're starting just all of the flotsam that they had at the beginning of the year, that's going to throw a lot of negatives onto those numbers. It's just like when you, if you're the Warriors in the starting lineup and for whatever reason they decide to play Brandon Rush in the starting lineup as opposed to Andre Iguodala because they want their bench unit, that doesn't make Draymond's job, that doesn't mean that he's doing worse. It's just they had a worse player out there. And the Pelicans, early in the year in particular, they were abysmal in that way. So I think that yeah, Paul George is doing that. I also still think that I think that Davis had a harder job to do, and yeah, he hasn't done it as well as we'd hoped, but I'm not as huge on, I think, on power forward defense as you are. I think that it's nice, but I still think center is the linchpin, and their centers haven't done that great a job.
Yeah, well, he's also been playing center to a fair degree as well, and I mean, it's just what kills me about it is just that he was really good last year and he just hasn't been as much this year. And he's 38th in RPM this year. And that's I don't always go by that, but that just matches up with exactly what I've been seeing from him.
I'm intrigued by why you thought Bosch is having a better season than Paul Millsap.
I think that Bosch has more versatility with his ability to switch to center as well. I think that he is just a little bit better of an offensive weapon than Millsap is, as far as both his shooting ability and creating shots. I think they're he's a little bit better defensively, again, because he can switch to center and protect the rim a little bit. I don't know, and I think I'm still overly influenced by both certain games this year against good teams, and also those games last year in the playoffs where Millsap just could not really create anything. He was, I don't feel like putting him out on the floor makes you a good offense. And I think Chris Bosh, when he's out on the floor, you've always got something that you can go to create a good shot. And I think Bosch is probably a little bit better defensively, a little bit more versatility. So that's ultimately why I would go with him. But again, that was very close. And I think, you know, I had Bosch kind of Bosch, Millsap, all those guys kind of below Paul George. Paul George was the easy pick for me. And then the rest of those guys got a lot harder.
Well, yeah. So what's interesting there is that it's just a philosophical difference between the two of us. I think that Chris Bosch is a better basketball player than Paul Millsap, but I think Millsap has been better this season, so I picked him. But if under your rationale, that was the right choice. I just disagree with how the choice was made.
Yeah, and frankly, Blake Griffin, by the end of the year, as long as he comes back in relatively short order from this quad tendon strain, he'll probably be in the spot above any of those other power forwards.
I would agree with that.
That we were talking about.
He's better than
third team center. I struggled with this as well. Considered Tim Duncan. I considered Marc Gasol, although I feel like he's dropped off to a fair degree. I finally went with Al Horford. I did not really feel great about that. I think Horford, just with his shooting, is probably one of the top two or three offensive centers in the league. Granted, the fact that he can't defensive rebound is not too good compared to other centers, and that they have this big Achilles heel there as well, but it was sort of the best of an uninspiring lot for me.
Yeah, I ended up going with DeAndre. I think that he's had a good year.
Yeah, and he could have been in there too, especially when you see that they've been pretty successful even with Blake out.
Exactly. Like, I think that he's been helped by that. And it's weird to put him on the third team when I think Blake has been obviously better this year, but that's just the nature of the positional definitions, is that, you know, he's competing against weaker guys than Blake is. And so I think that he's done a nice job this year. I don't love RPM. I was critical last episode about that he's second in RPM for some reason. But if there's something I'm missing, that's there. He is the second best defensive rebounder in the league behind Andre Drummond, who's already on my team. And, you know, he can block shots. He's not a great rim protector, but he can do enough. And his offensive role is very useful for them because he helps create space in a different way as a pick and roll finisher. And I think that, while I agree with you that Al Horford is, I think you would say this, Al Horford is a better basketball player, DeAndre has been better this year, and in a way that has really helped his team succeed.
I guess Dwight is another one that we could have considered, but again, with the way that they've defended this year, the inconsistent effort, it was hard to pick him, although he's had a few moments here and there.
Did you consider Whiteside?
No.
I didn't either. I was just...
He's not even closing games for his team.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, it's weird. Like, I'm sure there are people who look at the counting stats and who look at, I mean, that he is a great shot blocker, but he's just not as important to his team's success as these guys. I would have loved to, it would have been cheating again, to put Bosch at center. That would have been nice.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a ton of these power forwards that, although, I mean, if you really look at it, this has been, look how much better the perimeter players are on this list than the bigs. Those guys are just that. If that doesn't show you that we're heading to a more perimeter-driven league, you know, our top four, both of us agreed, our top four guys and MVP candidates were all smalls, and then, you know, even Draymond is kind of more of a. I mean, I think that and then the centers, Drummond and Cousins and Horford. I mean, those guys just don't measure up in terms of how good of basketball players they are to the guys who are at the other position.
And even some of the perimeter, some of the big men, quote unquote, have perimeter skills. I mean, Millsap has a jump shot.
Yeah.
AD has his handle and all that kind of stuff. I mean, we're going in a very exciting direction for me. Did you consider Towns at all? I considered him for a second and tossed him aside.
Nah, he's playing too few minutes and they've been getting killed lately.
Yeah.
So I don't think so. I mean, it's everyone should be considered, right?
Theoretically. Not Canner.
Yeah. biggest surprise team and player. This is just only over the last month for this particular category.
I went with the Orlando Magic. The Magic, it was one of those things that I just thought they were playing well. It was encouraging. They lost some close games and won some close games early on, and they continued it. They were the best team in the East on net rating in December. They were, I think it was plus 3.4. And I was just really...
Yeah, that's just for December. I shouldn't have said necessarily the month, because they've actually been getting killed now as we've gone into January.
I tried to make this one a little bit more month specific, but I would say that over the course of the year, they're still a great positive surprise.
No, that's definitely true. I agree with you, although because of these blowouts they've had recently, they're actually, since December 1st, they now have a negative 1.1 net rating. Part of that, too, I think is due to the Elfrid Payton injury.
They also shouldn't be allowed to play the Cavs anywhere because the Cavs just murder this team.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely correct. But, yeah, I think that makes sense, especially, you know, when you consider kind of where they were even a week ago. And actually, that ties in with my biggest surprise player, which is Channing Frye. I think a lot of people felt like that was just a terrible contract, that four-year, $32 million deal that actually declines. So that's helpful for his value. The idea that he was just such a poor fit with Vucevic, I thought him playing at power forward was a disaster defensively. And lo and behold, they are 12.7 points per 100 possessions better when he is on the floor at age 32. So he's having really a career best year from an efficiency standpoint. He's taking 75% of his shots from behind the 3-point line, which helps that. And, you know, I think his true shooting percentage is like 62 or 63%, which is unbelievable. And that despite having drawn two shooting fouls all year.
Wow. So the logic you used is very similar to mine, who is Will Barton. Will Barton, it's his birthday today. Happy birthday, Will Barton. But so his best 3-point shooting year before this year in terms of percentage was 30.3% in 2013-14. That was just on 33 attempts. This year he's at 38.6%, and he has his career best in true shooting, usage, assist percentage, rebounding, and turnovers. So this is a guy who...
And minutes. Perhaps even, you know, most important.
Yeah, so he's a guy who... He's the biggest surprise because I didn't think he had this in him, and he's doing it at a time where he still has room to grow, and he's established himself as a serious player in this league, whether he starts or he comes off the bench.
My surprise team was the San Antonio Spurs, because anytime a team puts up the best net rating in any month that we have recorded by 4 points per 100 possessions, that's probably a pretty big surprise.
Yeah, and it's ridiculous. Like, you think about just how good they were this month. I think it's hard to put into to really convey how good outscoring teams by 20 points per 100 possessions is. Like, it seems like it's impossible. It's kind of like you played the Sixers every night.
Yeah, especially when you consider that they actually lost two games.
Yeah.
You know, since that stat, that 20.4 net rating, it's since December 1st up until now. So, biggest disappointing team and player was very easy for me. Phoenix Suns, and the player is Markieff Morris, who looked like a guy who could be a solid starter on what would be a good contract, and basically has been out of the rotation for nearly the entire month. And not only is it just sort of like he's being punished, he's just playing like that. And he's playing like that even offensively. It's not like usually guys, if they're not trying, like they'll just be really bad defensively. But he can't do anything on offense either.
Yeah, he has. I wrote down, I have the same guy for most disappointing. I think he's the clear-cut choice. He's had the highest shooting rate in his career at the worst percentage of his career, and he turned the ball over at a remarkably consistent rate. He was like 12%, you know, something like that, which is okay. And it's up in the 16s now, so you're kind of thinking like, well, what is he doing? He's doing a lot of things that are less productive. And the other team, so the Suns were my kind of A team, but it was like the Rockets last time where it was kind of so obvious that I wanted to have another team too. And my other team was the Milwaukee Bucks. And the Bucks, they had a bad start to the year. We kind of thought that was a possibility. We both said they wouldn't make the playoffs. They didn't really turn it around a little bit in December, but not as much. They were still outscored by more than 5 points per 100 possessions. They were still bottom 10 in defense. And they were 6-10. So, I mean, to me, I had a hope that they were going to turn it around, and they just haven't.
By the way, the Spurs, best offense in the league since December 1st by 1.8 points per 100, best defense in the league by almost 5 points per 100.
Incredible.
Pretty remarkable. I mean, they're better than the Warriors by 4 points per 100 on offense since then. Now, granted, they haven't played anybody. We'll see. How that kind of turns out, and the end of their
January is a big stretch, so that'll be fun because all of that will be incorporated into when we do this again.
All right, this will be a short one. Rookie of the year, Karl Towns. KP second.
Yep. I didn't even think of a third though. You don't even really need one.
Monthly trend at the team level that will continue, and we can look back on our picks, actually, from last month. I did not have one because I'm a very negative person, and I accidentally put another trend that was an aberration last month. So I have three of those. So I didn't have one last month. What was yours from last month?
So my positive from last month was that the defense in Minnesota's starting five would continue. They were at they were allowing 83 points per 100, but basically that they would still be good, and they are. I think they're at like a 92 right now. So that lineup with Rubio, Wiggins, Towns, Garnett, and the eternal Tayshaun Prince is doing well. You know, it's still doing well. So that was a positive.
Yeah, and you see how bad like some of the guys like LaVine and Shabazz Muhammad are in the on-off statistics, and that's a big reason why. Like that lineup, as much as you might complain about the lack of spacing and all that, it's the only lineup they have that can stop anybody. So if they're still trying to win games, I kind of understand why it's still out there. All right, so what is your trend for this month that you believe will continue?
Houston getting back to an efficient offense. So they were really below their kind of traditional norms. They were 49% effective field goal percentage in November. Then last year they were at 51, so that was a decent drop. They were above, actually, last year's mark. They were 53.3%. And when I watch them, I just think that the horrible part offensively, their defense still sucks. But the offensive part, I think they're back to normal there.
Yeah, I think that's probably right, just because they take so many threes and they were just missing them. Yeah. I think that it's hard with that philosophy, unless you have like Sixers level of talent, to not be at least somewhat efficient when you're getting a lot of shots at the rim, you're getting a lot of free throws, and you're getting a lot of three-pointers, even if you're not that amazing at actually converting on those shots. Mine is that the Bulls are getting it together offensively. They have had a 110 offensive rating actually since Jimmy Butler made those comments that they need to be coached harder. They just look much better. Part of that could be that Noah has been out, but even when he was in with the second unit, they were looking better before that injury. Fred Hoiberg has been saying that they're doing a much better job of getting in transition, reversing the ball. They have guys who have a lot of talent. Derrick Rose is looking like he actually is like, you know, a real NBA player instead of his, you know, first month Kobe-esque performance. Nikola Mirotic is starting to find himself a little bit. Bobby Portis is playing more. His jump shot has been looking pretty good. Pau Gasol's efficiency is a lot better. Jimmy Butler, we know what he's done in the last five games or so, where he's gone absolutely crazy. So I think this team always had too much talent to continue being as bad as they were on. And also, I think Hoiberg is just finding better combinations, although the Mirotic of the three thing is still not that great. We'll see when Noah comes back. It's possible that he could kind of screw things up again, but I think there is just so much talent here that they're going to keep it going. What is your trend that is an aberration at the team level?
So, because I guess I'm a more positive person than you, this aberrational trend is also it's overly, basically what I'm saying is what happened is overly negative. And so that is that Oklahoma City, despite having a very good month, tied for the lowest opposing They tied for the lowest opposing free throw attempt rate in December, which is actually really good. I flipped it in my brain. And that is far better than they usually do. They were 10th from the bottom last season, and they were 9th from the bottom in 2013-14. So they basically, teams weren't getting to the line against them. And while they will still do well, that is something that should regress to the mean.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. For me, I had two of them. One is that the Magic would start to fall off. That's obviously already begun to happen. It always has had this crazy smoke and mirrors type of feel to it, with them relying so heavily on these veterans like Smith and Fry, who have essentially never played at this level before. The Payton injury, I think, is an issue. So I think that the Magic, I still am going to predict that they are not going to make the playoffs, despite the fact that they had such a nice December. And then obviously the Spurs with that ridiculous net rating, like that has to drop off. There's no way they can keep that going. What were your predictions last year for the thing, or last month for the things that were an aberration, and did those in fact come true?
So I said that the Knicks opponents would shoot better from three because they were actually under 30% for the month of November, and they have improved. It actually hasn't gotten as bad as I thought it would. Their defense has not done as well, but they're only, I think it's like 32% now that they're lying from three, which is closer to normal, but still below league average. And the other thing I talked about, and I haven't really checked up on it, is Memphis was killing it from 15 to 19 feet early in the year, and I'm pretty sure that's fallen off, but I didn't check it to be completely sure.
Mine, I had Washington turning it around. I think they, when we last checked in on them, they'd had like a really bad November. They were at like, you know, a -4 net rating. They've turned around a little bit, but the injuries have still been killing them. Beal, obviously, Nene, some of the other random injuries they've had on the wing. But they're at a -0.8 net rating since December 1st. That's not as much as when I said turnaround, I thought it would be better than that. I thought they would kind of get back to playing at, you know, a 45 win level, and that has not occurred. So they're still, you know, at a critical juncture in their season if they're going to still pretend that they're going to be in the East playoff race for much longer. And then I said that the Pels would play better. Again, sort of came true, but they're still at a -2.4 net rating since December 1st, and they're 7-9 in that period. I thought that they would be at least kind of 500. That hasn't quite come true. And then I also said, wow, I had four of these. I really was negative. Although I guess two of those were positive that teams would turn around. I said that Golden State would regress. They did. They're basically playing like the way they did last year. They're at kind of a 10 net rating. So two losses, but they're haven't been historically fantastic. Part of that was due to the Barnes injury, Steph missing a couple of games. They had a couple other games with guys like Azili and Rush. They had that Denver game where they really were blowing Denver out, and then they just ran out of players. And then finally that Charlotte would regress offensively. They're about league average now, so that has happened as well.
Yeah, and I think with the Warriors, to a degree, it's impressive if they're playing this way, considering they've had much worse injury luck than they did last year. So, you know, I think it's about what we expected. And so it is about the same, but I think that's positive. Except when the Spurs are outscoring people by 20 a game, but that's different.
All right, let's get to some news here.
Can I skip to one more thing? One other thing that if you don't have a guy, that's fine, but I have a guy. One of the things that I wanted to do in the month thing from here on out is picking a player of the month, and what I mean by that is not a player that was great before. It's somebody that I'm committing to watching more of and paying more attention to, and the guy for me is Aaron Gordon. When I've watched him, he seemed very good, but for whatever reason, he's at the bottom of Skiles' totem pole most of the time, so I just want to watch him a little bit more and get a sense, because he's a very intriguing talent, and I think you could argue that he's one of the real keys to Orlando's future, if not their present.
Yeah, and I'm going to go with Brandon Jennings, who had a real nice game the other night. Still doesn't look to have the same explosion that he did going to the basket, but especially what he means for Detroit being able to stabilize that second unit, if he can keep playing at, you know, even sort of an adequate backup point guard type of level, and also just because he's a free agent coming up. So he'll be someone I'm going to watch more of. And Detroit, I haven't had a chance to see as much over the last month or so after seeing them a ton in the first month, so I want to just check back on them as well. All right, so are we ready for news now?
Yeah, after I celebrate that you're committing to watch more of the Detroit's backups, because that'll be fun. We're going to see some angry tweets, I'm sure.
I don't know. I think they might be doing a little better now. So one thing I wanted to say, though, on the news, we go through these, you know, 2-3 times a week where we just kind of go through news. A lot of it's injury related. If we're absolutely open to feedback on this, you know, tweet at me or leave a message on my Facebook page. Both those are Nate Duncan NBA, about maybe how that section could be improved. Should we just not bother with it? I mean, because it feels like we're just kind of listing stuff off, and the idea is that we sort of want to be a place that you can go if you didn't get a chance to watch the games or catch up on news or whatever. It's hard to keep up on all 30 teams, so just to kind of keep your finger on the pulse of who's playing, who's not, you know, why teams may not be doing so well, et cetera. So if you can think of either a better way to present this, or if we should just get rid of it altogether, or whether it's totally good the way it is, we'd love to know that. So let's start with probably the biggest news, I'd say. Damari Carroll had arthroscopic knee surgery, now out 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, because we talked about how it really felt like the Raptors were missing him, and now they're going to be missing him wild. It seemed weird when the announcement came out. It's like, oh, by the way, he had surgery. And that's always weird to me when you don't hear the original diagnosis.
Yeah, a lot of kind of odd stuff around this. He'd had some cryptic comments after the Bulls game when he had been on a minutes limit that, oh, you know, I'm not really 100%, and a knee contusion that's just supposed to be a bruise, basically, is not something you would think would necessitate surgery, but maybe there's a little bit more to it than that, and maybe the idea was, all right, we're just going to try and rest him for, I think he missed like 9 games, and then see if he can go, and if he can't, then he'll just get the surgery. So yeah, I'll be interested to see how he comes back. I think they do ultimately need him to make any noise in the playoffs, although they've done an admirable job of staying afloat without him. He had a real nice start to the year, and then since he's been injured, obviously, you know, hasn't been able to play well.
Two waivings that I think are important. Shams Charania of Yahoo. Wow, it's weird to say that. He reported that the Jazz decided to waive Elijah Millsap, Paul Millsap's brother, before his guarantee date, and to sign Elton Brand, the Philadelphia 76ers waived Christian Wood.
Yeah, Millsap being waived, he actually contributed, I thought, a lot to defensively. He, I think, is a really good defensive player, has that potential. Obviously, he's an epic record scratch guy offensively, but is someone who maybe you could kind of just train to shoot corner threes in more of a Bruce Bowen-esque way, although Bruce Bowen, Andre Robertson, those type of guys, you could get away with them a lot more back into the old rules now that people are just much better at ignoring players who can't shoot at all. But I think he's someone who has enough potential that a team that really struggles to defend on the wing, I think actually like the Clippers might be a good potential landing spot for him as just a way to someone to throw on someone like Kawhi Leonard or something in a playoff series for a few minutes a game, if nothing else. And then Christian Wood released so they could sign Elton Brand. Wood actually cleared waivers. He's going to be playing for Delaware in the D-League Showcase, where I will be going tomorrow. And a couple of questions. A, is he the one you would have waived were you the Sixers? And B, are you surprised that no one picked him up off of waivers?
I'm a little bit surprised that no one picked him up, because not only did he have is he a guy with potential, but he has an incredibly team-friendly contract. So basically,
One of those 4 years hinky specials for the minimum.
Yeah, 4 years, and each one had a guarantee date of January 10th, so I believe it was. So it's like, so you know, you'd have a long time to figure it out each season in case you really wanted him. I think there are a lot of teams that if I were their GM, I would have claimed him with, just because he can shoot it a little bit. He has rebounding and. And when you have him on that cheap a contract, you know, you can do that. I mean, even a team like, let's say, Utah, they have Trey Lyles, who they think is their guy of the future, I don't think it hurts them at all to have another talented player who's on a super team-friendly contract.
Is there anyone else that you would have dumped instead of him?
Well, so they have a lot of point guards now, and while I don't think TJ McConnell is an inferior player necessarily to Christian Wood, I don't know that he's really going to play for them. I mean, they just gave up two second round picks. They have Cannon, they have Marshall, they have just all these guys. And so I think it's a better use of resources to maybe let whoever they think is the worst of their point guards go. But I understand it. It's another reason why I think rosters should be a little bigger.
Well, the old Sixers never would have done this, obviously.
Agreed.
I think that because I would say that Wood, he has more potential to be a part of the next good Sixers team than Hollis Thompson.
Oh, another good pick.
He has more potential to be part of the next good Sixers team than Jakar Sampson. He has more potential to be a big cog of the next good Sixers team than TJ McConnell does. Maybe even than Isaiah Kanan does. So, but this is a new era now where they're actually going to try and win a few games, and Elton Brand is just going to help with the veteran leadership. And the problem is that all those guys that I named are actually, you know, well ahead and are actually playing for them. And if they're actually trying to win games, releasing them over Wood would make them worse this year. The other thing Wood has a lot of talent, but I would say too, he's a lot easier to love when you're in our position than when you are internal. I mean, I think he basically talked himself out of the draft with some really bad interviews, as all reports indicated. And then they've been around him now for 4 months. He played a little bit and showed some flashes on occasion, but you know, I think they probably came to the conclusion that he just, from a mental standpoint, was not really in a position where he's going to fulfill that potential anytime soon.
And that's something important to understand with all this, is that we are dealing with information which is incomplete, at least especially relative to what teams have. You know, they're dealing with these people, they have both with their staffs and everything else, so there is information that we don't have.
Yeah, the Jazz, by the way, they kept Christopher Johnson over Millsap, that would probably be the other, would have been the other logical choice. But Johnson actually has been in the rotation, and Millsap has not been. Mitch Kupchak, these will try and make these some quicker hitters. Mitch Kupchak admitted that the Lakers 15-16 season is more about honoring Kobe Bryant than developing their younger players. Now, you never want to seize on one quote like that too badly. But if that's true, that's probably not very good, because those younger players are what are going to actually attract free agents to this team. So I think making them look as good as possible is much more important for the future of the franchise than honoring Kobe Bryant. You can play Kobe 25 minutes a game and still put those young guys in as much of a position to succeed as possible.
And you can even play Kobe Bryant as much as he wants to play while still making that, making your priority not only maximizing in terms of showcasing, but understanding what you have in these guys, because especially if they keep their pick, they have some really big decisions coming up. And if they're making worse information for themselves, if they're not going to know exactly what they have in all these guys, then that makes it harder to do a good job moving forward. And that's what actually matters, because this team isn't relevant right now.
Andre Vatutin, I believe is how you pronounce his name, is reportedly the top choice of Mikhail Prokhorov to become general manager of the Nets this offseason. He is the guy in charge of player acquisition right now at Cheska Moscow. And it would be an interesting pick. We've seen the only other European executive that I can recall moving over was Maurizio Gerardini, who was at I think Benison Treviso.
Yeah, he was
one time, and then some other European places as well. He worked in the Raptors front office for a while. I do think that making someone like Vatutin, who has no salary cap knowledge or really, you know, knowledge of the league, hasn't probably been following the league that closely as the chief decision maker, is something that does not sound like the greatest idea. Although, you know, I think he's someone who probably has a pretty decent eye for talent and would have some excellent European connections to bring guys in. And that's something that I think the Nets will focus on a lot, given that they have cap space and they don't have draft picks. But that's bringing in a guy who's never worked in an NBA front office to be your GM, typically in history, has not worked out that well. Avery Bradley is out a few games with a hip injury. We'll kind of run through these real quick. He's been ruled out of the next two games. Jeremy Lamb, it's noteworthy really only from the angle that this is another guy that got injured with a right wrist injury by a ridiculous Maurice Spates charge attempt, which of course was called a charge. He just undercut the crap out of him, sent him flying. I just hate that play. It gets guys injured. Like, the league needs to do something about it. We've said that ad nauseum.
Then, on a more positive, Emmanuel Mudiay is back. He came off the bench against the Wolves, and, you know, I think that's good for him for the long term, though I think you do want to figure out his chemistry, particularly when Nurkic is coming off the bench. I kind of like them as a second unit.
Yeah, that should be a good pick-and-roll combo, and frankly, the Nuggets have played a lot better without Mudiay out there. He was having one of the most damaging seasons in NBA history with his incredibly high usage rate and low efficiency. He probably just needs to, like, come off the bench for a little bit and chill out for a while. And, you know, you can reduce Jameer Nelson's minutes, obviously, but the team is clearly playing better with him. I think it makes sense for him to come off the bench for a while.
Tyreke Evans, again, is feeling pain in his knee, and Poindexter is still not back.
Well, Poindexter, at least, he's questionable for tonight. So that's actually, I think, faster than recent reports had indicated. But Tyreke admitted to feeling sharp pains in his knee. And that, you know, as someone who's had some knee surgery, sharp pains is a big difference over just, like, some swelling. I mean, I think, you know, when you've had some meniscus injuries or you've had a recent surgery, you'll just get some swelling just, you know, from the impact and stuff. Sharp pain sounds like kind of another issue and definitely a concern. I mean, he's had two surgeries so far in the last year and came back at the start of December, and now he's missing games again on that same knee. Mark another one in the ledger of the Austin Pelicans training staff, I guess, on that one. But Poindexter, I think, can help them. And if he can get back to playing at the level that he played last year, which, you know, is going to be a stretch, obviously, after missing almost 8-9 months here, I think he actually could be a more important player for them than Evans, as long as Drew Holiday is going to be able to take on his normal minutes load.
Yeah, we agree there. So Elfrid Payton's going to miss time. We talked about that before. And it sounds like Hezonja is going to be out tonight. or not, sorry, Hezonja. Evan Fournier is going to be out, and that my boy Mario Hezonja might get the start, which would be interesting to see him play with a kind of a different group of players.
That'll be good to see, and maybe they can start to get a little bit better of a feel for what they have with him. Tony Parker missed a couple of games with a sore right hip, not considered serious. George Karl, this is interesting, barely played Willie Cauley-Stein at all since he's come back, and he had some interesting quotes saying he doesn't think he's in good enough shape to play as fast as they want to, and also went back to the fact that he didn't think he was in great shape in camp. So that's a little bit concerning, especially because Cauley-Stein just had a hand injury, right? So there's no reason he shouldn't have been able to stay in shape while he was out.
Oh, you know how fingers limit your ability to run.
Omri Caspi missed his second straight game, that classic against the Mavs last night, with upper back soreness. And I just thought it was kind of telling because Rondo was also out due to lower back soreness. Some speculated that perhaps it was also a fear of being intentionally fouled. That was an issue for him. But
slash playing in Dallas for the first time since.
Yeah, that was. But it was remarkable that Ben McLemore still can't get on the court in crunch time. They're playing Seth Curry over him now, you know, basically a street free agent at the start of the year. Over Ben McLemore, so that tells you all you need to know about where George Karl thinks McLemore is right now.
I was really excited that you were going to call Seth Curry a street urchin, but no, you couldn't say that.
What else we got?
Bradley Beal hopefully coming back in late January. Derek Favors is still out, which is concerning. And then
he's missed 8 games now with back spasms. I can't remember someone missing that many games with just pure back spasms, although the Jazz insists that there is nothing structurally wrong there. Color me slightly skeptical of that at this point.
One that's not,
especially with this being a recurring issue.
One that's not in here, but I heard today was that Michael K. Gilchrist is optimistic that he might play this year, which would be exciting to see.
Oh, wow. Yeah, good for him.
It's nothing. Nothing's official yet. I think it was just one of those, like, he's hopeful type things, but that was the first inkling I've even heard about that possibility, so that would be great.
Alec Burks also had ankle surgery. I don't think we've mentioned that yet. He hopes to be back after the All-Star break. He went with the surgery in hopes of speeding up his healing timeline a little bit. And then probably the biggest one that we have to talk about is that Curry shin injury. He didn't finish the game yesterday. I'm sure he probably could have if they hadn't been up by a million against the Lakers. He just he didn't even get kicked. He sort of kicked out as he was shooting a layup and hit his shin into Roy Hibbert. And this is really, you know, he was limping around for a while. It didn't look good. And his quote after the game was essentially, it's going to take 4 weeks to heal. I'm not sitting out 4 weeks. It's kind of a pain tolerance issue, essentially, at this point. What do you think of all that?
I think that if that's the case, which is something, there was more color given to it than we knew before that, what they just need to be more cognizant of keeping his minute level low. Like, if once the game is out of hand, just don't play him. You know, you have other things. And what was very frustrating to me in that game was not only with Curry, but with Klay Thompson at the end, where, yeah, they're really shorthanded now because a lot of even their bench players, McAdoo is not playing right now. Just, it doesn't matter if your lineup is cohesive. When you're beating the Lakers by 20 or 30, just play whoever is the least damaging for you to lose, and it doesn't matter if you don't have a two-guard or a one-guard out there, just put them out there and they'll survive.
Yeah, I mean, this is when they're up 30. I mean, when he actually suffered the injury, their lead had gotten cut to 11, and then he stayed out there, and they immediately went on a 22-0 run to put the game away. And part of the reason why I think it's so tempting to leave Curry out there, too, is that he's really effective even playing at, like, 85%. Like he kind of has been lately, just because of the threat that he represents. So it's, and they still can't score other than when they're playing Houston and can backdoor every possession. You know, they can't score when he's not out there. They were horrible against the Mavericks when he went out against Denver. Then they basically couldn't score again and let Denver back in and were lucky to win in overtime against Denver. I don't know, but if it really is a 4 week injury and he's able to play on it still, I think they just got to try and find a better option with the padding that he's using and hope that he just doesn't get kicked in it for a while.
Yeah.
But I don't – it's hard for me to really – you know, if he's limping out there, obviously, that's one thing, right? Like, and he was limping for a time after initially hurting it, even when they put him back out there. So if that's the case, that means, all right, you're starting to compromise things. You're compromising your gait. You could have some more injuries add up. And for a guy who, you know, has had the history of ankle problems that he's largely gotten past, but you always worry about stuff in the lower body with him. And he also had that calf injury as well. So you don't want him to get some kind of a compensation injury. And that's, I think, a big reason why you should keep his minutes low. And they've been trying to do that. We got anything else here before we gotta go?
You want to talk about the Lakers TV ratings?
Let's save that for last, actually. There are a couple more here. KD, after that mildly sprained big toe, sounds like a game-time decision tonight against Memphis. Doesn't sound like anything super major for him, although, again, you know, any foot injury with him, you're a little wary of. And then Jared Bayless is in a walking boot for the Bucks. They've already got Vasquez out. Bayless is out. And so instead of playing Tyler Ennis, they went with O.J. Mayo as the backup point guard against the Bulls last night, which is that gives you an idea, really, of how far away Ennis is. Granted, he missed pretty much the whole offseason after having shoulder surgery, but I mean that he's looking like basically someone who's a decent candidate to get his fourth-year option declined, although he is a Jeff Schwartz client, and it is the Bucks, so maybe not. But if it's a possibility when he really just has not shown anything whatsoever in his career. I think he's played only 150 minutes so far.
Yeah, the throw-ins in that trade, while not the centerpiece of it, have not worked out as well for the Bucks as I think all of us hoped, just because we want everybody to succeed.
So this was reported by Ben Bulch with I forget who he works. Does he work for the
I think
LA
he's
Times?
LA Times.
Yeah,
he is.
Yeah, the Lakers' ratings on Time Warner Cable are at an all-time low. 1.68, which is only like the Clippers are like 1.16 or something. That's through the end of 2015. So this whole idea that, all right, we're going to keep Kobe around, keep the ratings up. There have been reporting back and forth that how much money they get from Time Warner depends on what the ratings are. It's not really working, this idea that we're going to keep Kobe around and keep people interested in the team, regardless of whether, you know, kind of the tickets prices for Kobe's farewell tour are pretty high. The TV ratings are not.
Yeah, because you have to think about the TV. Those are the people who are watching game in, game out. And I, you know, you and I watch a lot of basketball, and I do not enjoy watching this team most of the time. And that's hard. And if it's your team, I think it would be even tougher, especially when Kobe doesn't look like Kobe most nights. You know, some nights he gets a little bit closer. So I get it completely.
Yeah, other than the Warriors and I guess the Clippers, the teams in Pacific time zone and even Mountain time zone have not been very good. I mean, we've got Utah's okay. Denver, Phoenix has been horrible. Sacramento is not particularly aesthetically pleasing. Portland's okay. But then the Lakers, of course, and they always start at 7:30 here. So I'm forced to watch way more of them than I want to. And I was hopeful they'd be good this year. And they, of course, have not been.
Yeah.
All right, well, after that thrilling insight that the Lakers aren't very good this year, that's probably it. But you want to plug your Chris Paul piece?
Yeah, so I wrote a piece for the Sporting News about why the logic of if Steve Ballmer wants to win championships, I think they should trade Chris Paul in the short term. I also did a podcast with friend of your show and my show, Kevin Pelton, for Real Jam Radio, which was pretty fun. We talked about rule changes, Hakka, Euro fouling, and things like that, and then, of course, got into some bigger topics. So those are my two big things of the day.
All right, I did not write anything this week, so I'm just a podcaster for this week. But anyway, thanks so much to everyone for listening. We do appreciate any feedback you can give us if you want to hit us up on Twitter or whatever other medium you choose about, you know, how we're kind of doing the news, and always just happy to hear any feedback on how the show is on any real issues or ideas for segments or whatever. Like those are always fun to hear, and we appreciate the interaction. So that'll do it for today. We will talk to you all next time.